I have used a lot of commerce platforms in the past. By far, the most robust is Shopify. No matter how complex your business needs and no matter how large your business grows, Shopify can handle it. And they do handle it for brands like Rothy's, Ruggable, Allbirds, Knox, Magnolia, Brooklinen, Glossier, and Cotton, to name a few. You may already use another e-commerce platform and you may be super unhappy with it, but you've already put a lot of work into it and migrating to Shopify could seem impossible. But I'm here to tell you that it is quite easy. When I migrated to Shopify back in 2022, their apps and tools meant I just had to make a few clicks and everything was ported over as if by magic. Shopify also lets you design your storefront however you like, which from personal experience I know isn't the case for many other commerce platforms out there. All these features and all this control can result in more sales more often. So stop leaving sales on the table. Switch your business to Shopify today and discover why millions trust Shopify as their all-in-one commerce platform to build, grow, and run their businesses. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial at shopify.com/practical, all lowercase. That's 1 month for just $1 at shopify.com/practical. shopify.com/practical. Good morning, Prakaptan. I hope you're well. I have a couple of things to housekeep before this episode starts. So I've disabled pre-roll ads for this episode because I have a few housekeeping items, and I think that the number of them would make listening to ads and then hearing the housekeeping kind of annoying. So I've gotten rid of the ads at the beginning of the show for this episode. First, thanks to new patrons John Kuske and Patrick Jezierowski. Your direct support at $5 a month isn't just about getting ad-free episodes and access to other perks. It's about ensuring that my work can continue to be provided for free to those who can't afford to or don't choose to support it. It's not just me who should be thanking you, in fact, but everyone who benefits from this content. So on behalf of them and myself, thank you. Second, I've recently become an affiliate partner with a company called Reforest. I'm not going to go into a long spiel about them because I'm going to have the founder on this podcast as a guest, but they're a free browser plugin that plants trees whenever you buy something from one of their partner websites. So as an example, if you were in the market to buy a new pair of shoes from Nike, who is one of their partners, and you do that with their plugin installed, they plant a tree on your behalf. They have already planted 500,000 trees in their reforestation efforts, and if you want to help them do more of that, to plant more trees without spending any money or having to go out and dig holes and plant trees yourself, you can install the browser plugin for free at stoicismpod.com/trees. If you're wondering why I'm going to have this guy on the show, it is because being concerned with nature is part of Stoicism. And so in this very specific case, I think it's appropriate to have a conversation with somebody about work that is about that. Taking care of nature, that is. Also, I get 25 cents per new user who signs up. It's a one-time benefit, but I don't want you to do it so that I get 25 cents. I want you to do it because it's really cool to be planting trees. I hope you agree. Third, if you haven't downloaded the trial of the Stoicism 260 app, the one that Rudy has been working on for 15 months, it has recently launched. You've probably heard that at the beginning of every episode you've heard this month. Please do that today. This app has been in development for, again, 15 months, and I think it's something that you're going to want to at least check out because it will very likely benefit you in your personal Stoic practice. Right now, you can only download the app for iOS, but you can get it at stoicismpod.com/app. Fourth, you may have noticed that over the last few weeks, this podcast has taken on a tone that is a lot more self-improvement than it is about Stoicism as an academic topic. I want to say a word on that. Stoicism is a philosophy of self-improvement in that it is a private practice that the practitioner uses to achieve the knowledge of how to be excellent. There's nothing more self-improvement-y than that. This podcast got popular because it did something that other quote-unquote Stoicism podcasts weren't doing, and that I still don't think are doing. It was taking ancient texts, reading them, and then trying to break them down and transform them in a contemporary context so as to derive practical advice from them. So this podcast isn't a podcast about Stoicism. If it were, I would have called it learning Stoicism with Tanner or the history of Stoicism. Instead, I called it practical Stoicism. And I'm leaning more and more into that by beginning to make episodes that are mostly practical advice rooted in Stoicism, as opposed to being mostly episodes that attempt to translate ancient texts in ancient context. And that's because, one, we don't live in an ancient context, and I'm not some sort of orthodox Stoic preacher. I don't even know why anybody would want to be that, but I don't want to be that. And second, I don't want people to learn Stoicism from me. You can go to John Sellers or A.A. Long or Christopher Gill for that, academics in Stoicism. I want people to learn how to use Stoicism to make the world and themselves better. And to use a football analogy, because maybe that's helpful, if A.A. Long is a football historian, I'm a football coach. It's not my job to be orthodox. It's my job to help you succeed. So this podcast is going to be leaning a lot more into the self-improvement end of Stoicism, while always remaining, of course, deeply rooted in Stoic theory and practice. I am, after all, a Stoic myself. Finally, just a plain old thank you to all of you who appreciate this content and consume it every week. I don't care if you pay for it or not. I'm just glad that you find it useful. So thank you. Okay, episode time. This episode is about forming good habits. In order to have a conversation about forming good habits, however, we have to understand what bad habits actually are. When bad habits are not chemical addictions or compulsive behaviors rooted in psychoses of varied sorts, they are the result of vicious, habituated choices. Remember what Epictetus says about choices. Some things are in our control and others not. Things in our control are opinion, pursuit, desire, aversion, and in a word, whatever are our own actions. Things not in our control are body, property, reputation, command, and, in a word, whatever are not our own actions. Now, Epictetus is saying control, but what he means is choice. So I rephrase this as some things are ours to choose and others are not. Things that are ours to choose are our opinions, pursuits, desires, aversions, and in a word, whatever are our own actions. Things not ours to choose are our body, property, reputation, command, and in a word, whatever are not our own actions. So same thing, different choice of words, no wordplay intended there. Epictetus goes on to say, if you suppose that things which are not yours to choose are, in fact, yours to choose, then you will be hindered, you will lament, you will be disturbed, and you will find fault with both gods and men. Or, in other words, when you think you can choose stuff you can't choose, you wind up pitching a hissy fit when you inevitably run up against the impossibility of choosing, for example, the weather, or, more importantly, the behavior of others. But we are not talking about the behavior of others today, we're talking about the behavior of ourselves. We've become chronically something, and we don't like it. Perhaps we are chronically late, or chronically interruptive when people are speaking, or chronically inattentive, or chronically lazy. You know what it is for you, but there's something about yourself that you don't like and that you want to change, but you feel that you can't. So you fill in the blank. Whatever it is for you is what it is for you. If you get to choose your actions and behaviors, as Epictetus suggests, why can't you choose to be on time, or be more patient, or be more focused, or be less lazy? Why does it seem like these things have become part of your very character such that they are now cast in stone and are no longer actively chosen by you? Because they're not. Chrysippus, or at least I think it was Chrysippus, it sounds like a Chrysippian thing, but maybe it wasn't, but I'm going to pretend it was. Chrysippus once talked about the cone and the cylinder when trying to talk about one's character and why some characters were one way or another way. He said something like, if you push a cone over on its side, it's going to roll a particular way, right? You knock a cone on its side, it's going to roll in kind of a circle if you push it. Whereas if you push a cylinder over, it's going to roll in a different particular way, right? It's just going to roll straight downhill. Maybe it'll curve off to one side or the other, depending on the shape of the hill, but it's going to roll forward, not in a circle. So he's creating a metaphor for characters and, I guess, shapes. Our shapes roll differently because our characters indicate our behaviors. So how did we become cones or cylinders or squares or spheres or trapezoids or whatever other shape we might be in the first place? How did that happen? The ancient Stoics said that we became our shapes through our choices. Now, a small aside here, there is a paradoxical loop that arises when talking about this, because if our choices decide our shape and our shape decides how we choose, we have a chicken and egg problem. How did I become a cylinder? By making choices A, B, and C. But why did I make those choices? Because you're a cylinder. But why am I a cylinder? And so on forever until our heads explode. Removing ourselves from the ancient Orthodox context, however, one might be inclined to assume that our character isn't only formed by our choices, but by things that happen to us before we're cognitively aware enough to be careful about what we choose. So we're still making choices, but we're not really making them. We're not actively paying attention to what we're choosing. We're allowing things that happen to us to make our choices for us, in a way. I can use myself as an example here. I am a lot like my father in one regard. I seem to default to wanting to exert control over entirely arbitrary things. I am a habitual mansplainer in that way. And just for the record, I don't believe in mansplaining. I just think it's the term that has become associated with the behavior I'm talking about. The, well, if we do it this way, or no, let's put it here, or I bet you didn't know sort of behavior. Past co-host of this show, Eric DeMott, makes fun of me for this all the time. In fact, if you listen to my podcast, Fatherhood, which I co-host with Eric and my other friend, Brandon, he actually makes fun of me about it in a recent episode. And he's 100% right to, and I appreciate when he does because it kind of snaps me out of it. It's a reminder that I'm doing it and that I don't really like doing it. But I don't have that behavior because I actively choose to have it, at least not anymore. I have that behavior almost certainly because my father has always had that behavior. I've had impressed upon me a sort of anxious discomfort that I see summed up so well in those progressive auto insurance commercials where middle-aged men are compelled to just say certain things in certain situations that are just the same things their parents would say. I don't know if you've ever seen those commercials, but they're very funny. I've had my father's personality to some extent impressed upon me in a way that I've adopted some of it, not by active choice, but by a kind of passive choice. I've inherited it, you might say, although not literally. So I have an undesirable behavior that was impressed and then habituated way before I possessed the faculties or intellectual tools to prevent myself from habituating them, from taking a more active role in the decision-making or choosing process. If you've got something like this, you're already laughing about it because you know exactly what I'm talking about. There's something that you do that you would swear up and down that you do not choose, but is instead just a part of your character. It's part of who you are. There's nothing that can be done about it. But I'm here to tell you that that is wrong, or at least it's not completely correct. The reason we roll like a cylinder is because we've become a cylinder through our choices or experience. That is very true. But this shouldn't set us up to think, okay, I'm a cylinder now. I'll never do anything unbecoming of a cylinder because that's the shape I am forever. Once you've habituated a behavior, whether it's originated with your intentional choices or not, you no longer have to choose to express it. You simply do express it. And that puts you on a kind of autopilot. This is also very true. However, just as hard clay can be broken, smashed into bits, rehydrated, and returned to a moldable state, and then be reformed into a mug, you don't have to be a cylinder forever. But it is an absolute fudge ton of work to change your shape. Fudge ton of work or not, it is possible. Although the harder your clay, that is, the more habituated your behavior, the harder this process is going to be. But my tendency to want to exert control over arbitrary things that don't matter, thus their arbitrary nature, and your lateness and her laziness and his inattentiveness, all of it can be unhabituated through choice. And that is absolutely the only way it's going to happen. But it's going to be hard, super hard, extra fudging hard. So how can we make it easier? I'm going to take a quick break here, and when I come back, I'm going to share with you the strategy I use to attempt to get, it's a process, control over my own undesirable but habituated behaviors. Stay with me. This episode is made possible in part by Factor Meals, and I know that I've raved about this company and service in the past, but forgive me because I'm going to do it again because it is absolutely awesome. Chef-quality meals, each shaped around whatever nutrition methodology you prefer, paleo, vegetarian, vegan, low-carb, keto, whatever floats your boat, delivered to your door every week to help keep you eating the way you want to eat, even on and especially on days where maybe you don't have time to make the choices you want to make. And all of this is customizable to your schedule and lifestyle. At the very least, you need to learn more about it and decide whether or not to give it a try yourself. Head to factormeals.com/practical50, that's practical 50, and use the code practical50 to get 50% off of your first box plus 20% off of your next box. That's practical50 at factormeals.com/practical50 to get 50% off of your first box plus 20% off of your next box while your subscription is active. I have used a lot of commerce platforms in the past. By far, the most robust is Shopify. No matter how complex your business needs and no matter how large your business grows, Shopify can handle it. And they do handle it for brands like Rothy's, Ruggable, Allbirds, Knox, Magnolia, Brooklinen, Glossier, and Cotton, to name a few. You may already use another e-commerce platform and you may be super unhappy with it, but you've already put a lot of work into it and migrating to Shopify could seem impossible. But I'm here to tell you that it is quite easy. When I migrated to Shopify back in 2022, their apps and tools meant I just had to make a few clicks and everything was ported over as if by magic. Shopify also lets you design your storefront however you like, which from personal experience I know isn't the case for many other commerce platforms out there. All these features and all this control can result in more sales more often. So stop leaving sales on the table. Switch your business to Shopify today and discover why millions trust Shopify as their all-in-one commerce platform to build, grow, and run their businesses. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial at shopify.com/practical, all lowercase. That's 1 month for just $1 at shopify.com/practical. shopify.com/practical.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Habituated standards. That's what I refer to these undesirable but chronic behaviors as. And just one more time, just to make sure that I'm being clear, I'm not talking about behaviors related to mental illness or chemical addiction. I'm talking about stuff like what I've outlined earlier in this episode. You can't stoic yourself out of cocaine addiction or bipolar disorder, okay? I'm not saying that. Please don't take advice I'm not giving. Stoicism can certainly help people who are struggling with those kinds of things, but it cannot cure them of those struggles. It cannot overcome those struggles for them. Okay, now that that's clear, what is a habituated standard? It is a standard of behavior that has been habituated. Self-explanatory, right? It's your habit because you've done it so many times, it's a reflex and not an active choice. Have you ever tried not to move your leg when the doctor wails on your patella with that little rubber triangle hammer? You can't not do it. It's a reflex. Some of these reflexes are great, by the way. It's great that you've habituated the behavior of holding the door open for the person behind you. It's great that you've habituated the behavior of being kind to waitstaff. It's great that you offer to let the elderly sit in your seat on the bus because you don't need it. Those are all things that some people don't choose to do. They just do them because it has become a part of their character through habituation. And that is virtue, by the way. The sage is really just a good robot, if you think about it. They have spent a lifetime habituating choices that are just and virtuous, so they can no longer help but make just and virtuous choices. That's your aim in life, to become a good robot, so to speak. Because you're going to become a robot no matter what. You're going to become a thing that reflexually does, if that's a word, as if it were a reflex is what I'm trying to say, what you've habituated. So you're going to become a robot of your character no matter what. And it's your responsibility to become at least a halfway decent robot, if not a sage bot. Ooh, a SageBot. That sounds like a product. I'm going to put that on the back burner. We'll come back to that in a year or two. I promised you a strategy. Here it is. A strategy for habituating good behavior, better behavior, creating better habits. The first thing you're going to need is a visual reminder of some sort. This is practically required. You need something to remind you that you have the ability to choose your behavior. I don't have anything to sell you, though maybe I should start a habit-forming business. God, that's two business ideas in one episode. How about that? Anyway, but it doesn't need to be complicated. My recommendation is a bracelet. And I know that's going to seem super what would Jesus do of me to say. Everybody probably remembers those WWJD bracelets. That's what you're thinking of right now. But they work because they're a little bit awkward. They feel weird on the skin. You don't really forget you're wearing them. They're presently there. For me, my visual has become my wedding ring. It's actually become a tactical reminder as well, or a tactile, I should say, not tactical, a tactile reminder as well. It's something I flick with my thumb on the same hand when I'm thinking. It's a call to refocus me on the fact that my choices aren't just about me anymore, that they very directly and deeply involve another two people, at least, my wife and my son. And no, don't get excited. He's not here yet, but he's already in the will, you know? He's already part of the picture. And that new mooring has been a very powerful one for me. Now, I'm not saying go get married, although if you want to, please do. It's wonderful. I'm saying instead that you should go get a fidgety sort of thing that calls your attention to it frequently. Some people attempt this with tattoos. And as a person with tattoos, I can't exactly tell you that I'm against it. I do, for example, like the idea of four very small dots between your thumb and your index finger on the back of your hand. That sort of thing can act as a subtle, not life-changing reminder of the four cardinal virtues, right? Four dots, four cardinal virtues. Not a bad tattoo from a utility standpoint. On the other hand, there's no need to tattoo your whole damn back with a picture of Marcus Aurelius's face. Okay, that's unnecessary. Plus, you can't see it. But if that's what you want to do, far be it for me to stop you from that being your reminder. I'm just saying, if you're going to do a tattoo, a little inconspicuous tattoo on your hand that you know the meaning of and that you will see all the time every day is probably more useful than something more grand and less inconspicuous than that. So that's step one. A highly visible, ideally tangible, tactile thing that you know is there and that you know it's there specifically to remind you about your power to choose your behaviors, attitudes, and actions. It has to be something you're going to see and touch 100 times a day because you are going to make 100 choices a day, or at least you're going to have the opportunity to make 100 choices a day. And probably you'll have even more opportunities to work against your present character when that opportunity surrounds a thing that you've been habituated to do. Step two is what I'm calling 3-2-1. Because 3-2-1 is easy to remember, I guess. It's going to sound a little bit kooky, but it is intended to. It's an exercise meant to break your pattern. It's meant to be slightly disruptive and to pull you out of your own head, I suppose. Whenever you find yourself fiddling with that object, or as many times as you can manage, you're going to first take 3 slow breaths in and out. So 3 breaths in, 3 breaths out. Then you will think of 2 people who matter to you. And lastly, third, you will say, I get to choose just once. So we're taking 3 slow breaths, thinking of 2 people who matter to us, and saying, I get to choose 1 time. 3-2-1. And I'm going to explain to you, don't worry, why I think doing these 3 things can be so helpful. The deep breaths are helpful because, frankly, we don't pay a lot of attention to our breathing in general. Too many of us breathe shallow and quick, and it's probably just healthy to take a few deep breaths during the day. But also because slow and intentional breathing has been shown to improve cardiac sympathetic and parasympathetic responsiveness and gives us a sense of control and presence in the moment. This helps us not to feel caught up in the stream of time, but to be instead in the moment right now. This is a great state of mind to be in, by the way, if you're going to make a choice that is free of fears, anxieties, or concerns about the past or the present or the general rush of life. And the breathing is a specific kind of breathing. You maybe have heard about it before. You're going to breathe in through your nose for 4 seconds, out through your mouth for 7 seconds, and then hold it out for 8 seconds. If you have heard of this before, you know it's called 478 breathing, and it's based in yogic exercise, but has been scientifically proven by countless outfits to include the NHS, the NIH, Cleveland Clinic, the Mayo Clinic, countless universities. There is a lot of wooey aspects in yoga. Breathing is not one of them. Next, you're going to think of two people who matter to you, and you're going to do this in the Senecan sense. Seneca, if you remember from an episode a long time ago, said in one of his letters that you should always imagine that your mentors are looking over your shoulder. And when you imagine this, you are more likely to be prompted to behave in ways that would make them proud, because you would be somewhat ashamed to act poorly in front of them. That's how much you look up to them. The two people you think of don't always have to be the same two people. They are for me, but they don't have to be for you. The important thing is that they should be people whom you know would want you to make consciously good choices. These are people who want you to be the best version of you. Maybe it's your grandmother and your brother. For me, it's my wife and my sister Samantha. For others, it might be their father and their childhood teacher. It doesn't matter who it is, so long as you believe their imagined presence encourages you to take your choices more seriously. Lastly, you're going to say, "I get to choose." Now, this is something of an affirmation, and I recognize that the idea of staring into the mirror and saying, "I feel pretty, oh so pretty, I feel pretty and witty and gay," is probably not what any of you want to do. And that's fine, because that's not what I'm asking you to do. I'm asking you to simply, one time, remind yourself that you get to choose, because guess what? If it wasn't the case that you'd forgotten this fact, you wouldn't have any undesired habituated standards to overcome. So stop worrying about seeming like a stoic Maria Vasquez and do what I'm telling you to do. If you've never seen West Side Story, you're not going to get any of those jokes, but I made them anyway. And that's it. That's the strategy. I promise you, as much as one human being can promise another human being anything, that you're going to notice a difference within just 3 days of doing this. If you doubt me in any way, just give it 3 days of serious, consistent effort. If I am wrong, email me, tanner@nosages.com, and I will give you my mailing address, and you can send me a handwritten, nasty letter with a booger in it in the mail. That'll teach me. But this will work, and you will be quickly on your way to reshaping the clay of your character. Thanks for listening to today's podcast episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you're not already a subscriber, please go ahead and hit the follow or subscribe button in whatever app you're using. It's the only way to ensure you get reminded of new episodes every time they come out, which, by the way, is twice a week if you don't know that. A brief reminder that my son is practically here, and so in the coming month, you will hear episodes hosted by other people, and that's just meant to give me some time away from the podcast to pay attention to my new role as a father and to make sure that my wife isn't the only one changing diapers, which would be very wrong of me. So if you hear Anya Leonard or Donald Robertson or William O. Stevens or A.A. Long hosting an episode of this podcast, it's because they're wonderful people who want to help me out and give me time to adjust to my new role as a father. Be prepared for that and be excited for it, because those people are way smarter than I am and you'll enjoy hearing from them. Thank you one more time for listening, and until next time, good luck forming those new habituated standards, and take care.